We're back on the air. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm the host of Radio Entrepreneurs, and I want to thank all our listeners who keep connecting with the show. And I'm lucky today. I have my my favorite groupie to my left, my co-host for the day, Peter Morrison from the esteemed law firm of Cohn, Rasnick, Morrison, and Plout.
And you know how much I like being here, Jeff.
I know.
It's always great. It's a great experience.
It's great having you here, not billing, Peter. I think I win on two fronts. But our next guest, who I know you're going to like, is Roger Sammets from Sammets Blackstone Associates. Welcome.
Thanks for having me back.
Good. Before we get into the interview, I know you've been here before. Can you just give us a little your elevator speech on the company?
Our elevator speech is not quite as fine-tuned as organizations' elevator speeches should probably be. We're a brand strategy, digital media design, and content development firm that largely is around to help both profits and nonprofits define and articulate and then promulgate who they are,
right,
to build connections and resonance so they can accomplish their goals.
Interesting. And are there particular types of companies that you prefer to work with?
Well, we're sort of in five business areas. We're pretty well known in academia and in cultural spheres, in financial services and professional services, and in life sciences.
Oh, nice. Are there particulars that make those industries unique to work with?
We're in a fortunate position of being able to work with people who we believe can make a difference, and then who we believe we can make a difference for. So to take nothing away from the people who make screws for a living, we tend to work with organizations that have some positive impact out there.
Right, I like screws. They hold everything together.
Yeah, I don't want to denigrate screws, especially when you need them.
Right, right.
But you actually source out people that you really think have some value to the other than screws. I mean,
yeah, we for years we've had sort of three criteria for the work that we choose to embark on, and it's sort of strategic, creative, and financial. So they have to sort of, you know, fill in those criteria. Seem to have a mishap on the table here.
No, we have a cup with a leak.
Okay, we have an engineering problem.
Right. No, it wasn't a screw problem though.
No, we've been very fortunate to work with people who we, you know, believe can make a difference and for whom we think we can make a difference.
How long have you been around?
We're in our 37th year.
So you've got some serious traction in this space.
We beat me by a year.
Traction. What?
You beat me by a year.
Well, we've had some clients like Harvard Medical School for actually slightly more than 37 years, because before I founded the firm, I worked with them.
What was your background before that?
Well, I've always sort of been doing this. I have a BA and an MFA from Yale, but it was clear with my design degree that if you didn't add programming and message development, you were just making a different kind of pictures for people. So we started in on the kind of brand strategy side of things before there were words for that.
Right.
A long time ago.
I remember those days. So do you have to work with your companies to help them on their elevator speech? What's wrong with my English since you walked in here?
It's your job to master English.
Yes. I say that to my staff
all the time.
That's
a challenge sometimes.
Yes, I mean, we often work on elevator speeches. They are most often in the context of developing a wider messaging framework. So an elevator speech sits sort of on top of a structure of additional messages that you also need. We can talk about that if you'd like.
Sure, definitely.
Okay, so, you know, an elevator speech, everybody wants one. And there's a good reason for it, and kind of it's been around a long time, the notion from when elevators went up fewer floors, because it represents a distillation of what an organization is. You know, ideally a good one is, you know, who you are, for whom, what do you do, and why should anybody give a damn? And they serve both internal and external purposes. So, you know, externally, which is probably what most people sort of associate, if you're in an elevator with somebody and someone asks you what you do or who you work for, you're able to actually articulate that and not sort of fumble around with the elevator buttons.
Right.
But internally, they're equally important because, and we know, and you probably know because you interview a lot of people, organizations, within organizations, people will describe that organization very differently. So that does not lend itself to getting an informed core of ambassadors out there if everybody you talk to within an organization has a slightly different tilt, not because they're talking to somebody different, but just because they have a different notion and because there's been no consistent notion promulgated across the organization.
I think the consistency is also a problem, not just having the elevator speech.
It's right.
Getting every, like, I was with a law firm a couple of weeks ago, and the problem wasn't finding that elevator speech. It was getting 30 attorneys to say the same elevator speech.
Oh, no.
Well, that's almost impossible. I mean, I taught a course at, of these young lawyers, and it was about starting up a firm. And one of the issues I raised was you have to be able to tell people what you do in 30 words or less.
30?
Right. 30 is fine.
You can get
what
30.
What generation are you from?
You can get 30.
30 is fine.
You know what generation
I keep reading now about 3 words or less.
Well,
ultimate driving machine.
Well, with the okay, there's a difference between a tagline and elevator speech.
I don't even call it a tagline. That's a unique selling proposition.
Well, sure, but assuming that you have something interesting to say, I think you can get away with 30 words. But yeah, I mean, internally, certainly consistency is an important part. But if you don't have something around which you can build that consistency, then you can't get to consistency. So. The notion of an elevator speech is certainly important. Obviously, it's a metaphor for, being in an elevator and not having a lot of time.
No, I think the point is you have to get, cognitively through to your audience quickly.
Right.
With what makes you unique and special.
But the process of getting to that elevator speech is also one that builds engagement within an organization, because you can't get there if you don't know your brand basics, if you don't know the category of organization you are, if you're not clear on your business model, if you're not clear on your areas of focus, if you're not clear on the roles you play out there, if you're not clear on the needs you fulfill, the promise that you have. So actually having to do that homework is in and of itself, a real value. Then yes, you have to put it together.
Now you see, when I picked on law firms, it had a triggering effect on Peter. It was almost Pavlovian. Do you think organizations can do this on their own, or do they always need help?
They can certainly try to do it on their own. I mean, it's often very helpful, which is not to say that, we obviously are often the helpers. It's often helpful to have an outside perspective, because you do need to sort of extract, for lack of a better word, these concepts from people across an organization and sort of, figure out, how they go together. And you have to get people beyond their particular fiefdoms, or beyond, well, I've always said it this way for 20 years or whatever. So an external consultant is helpful the way external perspectives are always helpful to, not let an organization
and
kind of get mired in.
Non-partial, objective, outside.
And experienced.
Clearly, a content expert
right.
is helpful.
So you have to get all these brand basic sort of content bits down, and then there are different kinds of exercises that you can do to sort of try to put this together.
You know why I like putting your concepts across the hall from Peter and the legal concepts? Because lawyers make money by having more words and by being more detailed and thorough in their explanations of things. And I think it's almost counterintuitive for them to do things in a more brief way.
I don't agree with that. I mean, but then we never agree. So what's the difference? I think the issue that Raj is raising really is the heart of it is, can you make this determination without having somebody acting as a mirror? In effect.
Right.
Well, that wasn't what I was addressing.
I know.
But I agree with that.
I know. But
we'll take you and your four partners. I could never get you on the same marketing page.
Well, yes, you can.
But to the length idea, and we certainly worked with law firms, but, even if it's long and you get it all down, then distilling that is still a far more productive process than not knowing what your value proposition
is. I think the process is extraordinarily beneficial for people. And, earlier in my career, when I used to be paid to sit in a room and to do it for the client, it didn't have as much buy-in as later in my career when I had the client, when I worked the process of having the client sort of figure that out on their own. It may not have been as pretty as the results that I was getting earlier in my career, but it was it had more of a lasting effect and more buy-in within the organization.
Right, and I think that buy-in happens on two sides. It happens at the beginning when you're trying to work on your brand basics and get people to agree on, you know, the value proposition and what do different constituencies care about, and you know what position can you own out there in the world that isn't already owned. And then what we do is we bring our work back into a workshop environment when we think we've got things pretty cooked, and work with different groups within an organization so that they actually have to play with it and own it. So I just back last night at 1 o'clock from Houston, where I did four workshops for the symphony there. So every group, development, marketing, education, and 55 people in a boardroom, so that they could have, you know, these role-playing exercises and try to work with them and try to tilt messages for different constituencies, because talking to a single ticket buyer is different than talking to a subscriber, is different than talking to somebody for planned giving.
A lot of groups.
So, you know, they got a great deal out of it. So we brought in their elevator message, but then they had a kind of, after we did an exercise about, okay, what do you want these different constituencies to really think and do? Because you want a subscriber to actually do things slightly differently than you want a single ticket buyer to do. Then they rewrote the messages. So just that process.
Right.
And also, incidentally, like, you know, wine and things like that help with this process. But just
wine
that,
for who? The listener or for the creator?
The people in the room in the workshops. it's trickier at 10 in the morning. But no, you want to loosen people
somewhere.
Up. It was Texas. But just, you know, having to dig into this thing rather than having somebody, you know, push messaging across the table, then they all felt, okay, you know, I can actually use this stuff. So I think engagement happens on both ends. And it's great to have that speech in the middle, but how you build it and then how you promulgate it within an organization are equally important.
I think that's an important, sorry, Peter, I'll let you go.
No. I was going to say, I think it's really important, but you know, I mean, I listen to people come in. I mean, I think this is a good general conversation because I have clients come in, young kids come in and try to describe to me what they do, you know, in a new business. I mean, my business is startup businesses. And, you know, invariably they run on and on and on and on. And, you know, they're looking for money. You know, if you're looking to some sort of VC, you know, they're not going to be able to hold their attention for very long. And
well, we also make it easier for people, and it might be something that's even useful for the kind of clients you're talking about, where we actually sort of start with a kind of template that people have to fill in. So, you know, for X constituency, Y company is, you know, what's the big noun phrase that does what? Those are sort of the, you know, the tangible programmatic things it does that delivers, you know, what kind of benefits, and then how do they do it, and what's the reason you should, you know, depending on what the organization is, you know, buy stuff, participate, invest. So by filling in this kind of Mad Libs kind of thing, and you fill in lots of different blanks.
I love Mad Libs.
Huh?
I talked about Mad Libs yesterday with a client.
It's a Mad Libs model. Right. So, you know, in a room, you fill in lots of different blanks because the answer to, you know, the big noun phrase of what the organization is could be, you know, literal like a symphony orchestra, or it could be evocative like, you know, my cultural, you know, touchstone or something. People have very different ways of describing it. So you fill in all these different things, and then you can kind of, like Mad Libs, you know, go pick the ones you want. But starting with a template that at least covers the, you know, who you are, you know, for whom, what do you do it, why should anybody care, gets the information down, and then you can use that as a palette to, you know, build a message. I mean, it's not going to be good English, but it's a way to get stuff out of people and, you know, onto a big post-it so you can work with it.
Well, you know, a topic that I like a lot, and I could talk to you a lot more about it, but just like the subject, this interview has to have an ending also. So we might have to bring you back again and continue to talk about branding, cognitive awareness, creation, all these things.
Sure.
Roger, if somebody wants to find you at Sammet's Blackstone Associates, how would they do that?
Well, email works. It's roger@sammets.com, and the website is sammets.com.
Pretty easy.
It is pretty easy.
Not Sammet's the accounting firm.
No. Although related.
Oh, you are related. Isn't that interesting? Well, see, just pulled that one out of my hat. You never knew. And I want to thank you for being on the show today.
And well, thanks for having us.
Remind everybody, this is Radio Entrepreneurs. Again, I'll repeat it. We were speaking with Roger Sammets from Sammets Blackstone Associates, and it's quite clear that Roger has a handle on this process and how to deal with it. If you want to learn more about it and you want to watch him, you can find him on our YouTube channel. You can also find him on our website for the next 45 days. I'm sure Roger will also have the interview. I want to thank Peter Meyerson again from the law firm Cohn, Raznick, Meyerson & Plout, and there's no way the four of you partners could get on the same page.
That's probably true.
Okay.
We could use Roger for other purposes.
Yeah.
Well, you just found out how to find
us. I actually do have a methodology for that, though. It's called the ECT. And with that note, I am going to end this interview. This is Jeffrey Davis. We'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.